Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, September 12th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Jordan Nigro from the Zach Gordon Youth Center will give us an update on activities. We'll find out about this year's League of Women Voters Municipal Candidate Forum. We'll talk to Hal Geiger from the Foundation for End-of-Life Care and Dr. Kate Payman from the Juno Medical Society about the film Being Mortal. And we'll talk with Catherine Heumann about the third round of community sessions concerning the proposed Willoughby Arts Complex. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Standing Rock Sioux Chairman Dave Archambault told a crowd gathered in Bismarck, North Dakota Friday that a public policy win is stronger than a judicial win. This after a federal court ruled against the tribe in its fight to halt the Dakota Access Pipeline project. The chairman pointed to the announcement following the ruling by three federal agencies, which asked the pipeline company to pause construction. Federal agencies are also inviting all tribes to formal government-to-government consultations in the fall to discuss infrastructure projects and the protection of tribal lands, resources, and treaty rights.
It's a win for all Indians. It's a win for Indigenous people. There's still time to work with the different agencies and inform them of what it is that Indigenous rights mean.
The tribe says it will continue to fight the pipeline, while pipeline supporters say development will happen. A group in Montana is encouraging Native Americans to register to vote, with weeks left until the November U.S. presidential election. Eric Tegedoff has more.
The nonpartisan group Western Native Voice is organizing for the upcoming election, often traveling long distances across the Treasure State. Alyssa Snow, state field director for Western Native Voice, says a bigger hurdle to getting the Native population to vote is apathy.
We get complacent. We don't realize that we are capable of making change, and the first step to that sometimes is by voting for our legislators and getting people in there that understand our issues and can fight for our communities.
Snow says Native communities are focused on issues such as housing, childcare, and drug addiction, and that her organization wants to make the connection between these issues and local elections. Western Native Voice, Native organizations, and tribal leaders were integral in getting Medicaid expansion passed in the Montana legislature.
We organized the Native communities. We brought people in from all over the state to testify in favor of the HELP Act.
The deadline to register by mail in Montana is October 18th. Voters can register the day of the election at the polls. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Many South American countries recently honored their Native women with a holiday. Reporter Elizabeth Troval went to a celebration on Indigenous Women's Day in Santiago, Chile, and has this report.
At an Indigenous Artisans Expo, Chilean businesswomen sell everything from Mapuche herbal medicine to Rapa Nui seashell jewelry. In her booth decorated with green baskets and miniature canoes, Carolina Quintul closes the deal on a pendant woven from a seagrass called junquillo. Weaving junquillo is one of the ways Carolina keeps her ancestral traditions alive. She's a descendant of the Kaiwaskar, seafaring nomads from Tierra del Fuego. Carolina says there are few living members of her tribe left. The surviving elders you can count on one hand. Carolina is among hundreds of women who traveled to Santiago to showcase their artisanship for Indigenous Women's Day. Chile's National Indigenous Development Agency and the Women's Ministry organized the expo. Atop Santiago's Cerro Blanco Hill, Fernanda Araya pays tribute to Indigenous women a little differently. She organizes a celebration called the Ancestral Female Awakening. Fernanda says the event is meant to remember female ancestors and their traditions. We believe that it's necessary to return to the earth, Fernanda says. It's necessary to share this knowledge of medicine, politics, artisanship, art, music, and pass it on to new generations so it isn't lost. Hundreds take part in activities like the Temescal ceremonies, Mapuche weaving classes, and Andean music performances. I'm Elizabeth Troval.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the National Indian Education Association, the only national Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. You can become a member at niea.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 12th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. In the studio now is Jordan Nigro. She's the manager of the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Hi, Scott.
All right, so school is going. What does that mean for life at the Zach Gordon Youth Center?
School is going, yeah. So what that means for us is, you know, our hours during the school week are 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and then Fridays it's 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Saturdays it's 3 to 10 p.m. So during the summer, we're open to kids right away starting at 11, but during the school year, if kids are in school, then we don't want kids cutting school to hang out at the youth center. So we're open after school to school-aged kids. And if you have toddlers or little ones that aren't in school yet, or some homeschool families come and use the facility during the day.
Okay.
So we still do open at 11, but it looks a little different.
All right. So you say school age. What does that mean exactly?
So elementary and all the way through high school.
All right.
Yeah. And we have all the schools get out at different times depending on the age. So starting at about 2:30, we have quite a crew that starts coming in, and then so the elementary kids come first, and then we have middle school kids, and then the high schoolers after that usually. So we're pretty busy right after school. We have lots going on. There's we have, you know, pool tables, and we always have food out after school, and we have the climbing wall, and we have basketball, outdoor basketball and indoor basketball. We have homework happy hour that's Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays from 3:15 to 4 in our new wellness center.
So, is that popular, the homework?
Well, it's, you know, we're just starting it up, but we have had kids participating in it, which is great. I mean, you know, it's nice if kids can just, like, get their homework done before they have to go home, and the rest of their night, it's just kind of easy. Get it done off the table. We have our two Jesuit volunteers this year that are really excited about homework happy hour, and they're available to tutor and help the kids out. So that's great.
And as a reminder to our listeners, this is totally free to the
totally
public, right?
Free. Yep.
And you're located over here.
Yep,
just next
we're located at 396 Whittier Street, which is basically across the parking lot from Centennial Hall. So yeah, and a lot of the downtown kids walk, but we have kids from Santokahini that take the bus in, and so yeah.
Do you feel like there's a population missing that hasn't figured it out yet, that there's this cool, free, awesome place to hang out after school?
Well, I'm sure there are some kids that don't know, so I always am just like, try to spread the word. Yeah, and then, you know, the other thing that the school year means for us is starting up our BAM after school program, which stands for Body and Mind, and that's at both the middle schools, and so those activities are starting up, and we're pretty excited about another great school year. And this year we are partnering with the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute to offer some artists are coming in and on doing classes within the schools, starting with Della Cheney, who's going to come in and teach a cedar bark weaving class at Floyd Dryden this fall, and then she'll do another series in the spring at Santokahini. So that's really exciting. And just a reminder for folks listening, if there's something that, you know, you're excited about and want to share with middle school kids, we're always looking for volunteers for our BAM program. That's really how it runs, is through partnerships and volunteers. And the number that you can call is 796-5811 if you're interested.
And BAM stands for Body,
and Mind.
And how many days a week is it in the
schools? So it's Monday through Thursday at both schools after school. And it really depends. We don't necessarily have an activity every day. We try to, but it kind of depends on, you know, how many volunteers we have at the time. And sometimes we'll have multiple activities going on because we, if someone's interested in volunteering, we really try to work with them to figure out what will work for their schedule and what will work for the kids. So the activities happen from 3:05 to 4:30 after school, and then kids can take the bus home, the activity bus home at 4:30.
What have been some popular ones so far?
Well, you know, cooking is always super popular. Any sort of cooking class is great fun. JEDC has done some robotics sort of classes, and the kids always like that. We have archery, and the kids love that. We have HerSpace, which is a group for girls that is always super popular. So one of the things is we are really happy to try out anything, because even if it's a small group, that's a small group that's doing a healthy thing after school. And we'd love to have just lots of offerings so kids can choose what they want to do.
Off the top of your head, what might be something that program needs?
Let's see. Well, you know, one fun idea that we've had is this new Harry Potter book, I guess, that came out is kind of a play. And so we were laughing the other day and kind of brainstorming, and our coordinator for the BAM program had this great idea of having, if somebody could come in and we could make a play of the Harry Potter book with kids. That'd be pretty fun.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, really, we're pretty open to lots of stuff. I think if the main thing is making sure it's something middle schoolers would be excited about. And what I have found is if you're excited about it, middle schoolers will get excited about it. You know, I do a mixed media art class for the kids, and I did it last year at Santagahini and at Floyd Dryden, and it was so much fun. I mean, I just have to say middle schoolers are a hoot. So, you know, that is part of the and the great thing about BAM is, you know, it's just a fun time. We just want kids doing healthy and fun things after school, and you know, you get to have these great conversations with these really cool kids, and
sort of like a mentorship too.
Yeah,
right?
And you know what's nice is I see those kids now in the community. Some of them come into Zach Gordon, and some of them don't. But I think this is just BAM is another great opportunity for kids to know that there's adults in the community that care about them, and we live in a small enough town that you might run into those kids at the grocery store or the post office or wherever as they grow up, and it's just more adults connected to kids, which is what we need. So
a shout out in particular to anyone maybe with a little bit of acting background.
Right.
Right. Who loves to read, who loves Harry Potter.
Or anything else.
Yeah,
we're open to any sort of theater. We don't have any sort of theater stuff,
okay,
which would be really fun if, you know, if somebody wanted to do something.
And outline again how many weeks they would go to the school?
So it really depends. We have some people that do activities. They'll say, I have 1 week and I'm going to do every day after school for 4 days. And that is their activity. And then we have other people, like I did mine over a 6 week period every Wednesday. So we have people that do it once a week, twice a week. You know, but most of the activities run 6 to 8 weeks. So it just kind of depends on what works with your schedule. But we're really willing to work with anybody.
And if they're interested, who should they call?
They should call Truitt at 796-5811.
One more time.
Truitt at 796-5811. And if you don't get that or you can't remember, just call Zach Gordon Youth Center and we'll connect you, and that number is 586-2635.
All right. You mentioned the Wellness Center earlier in our conversation. What is that?
Yeah, so there's we have been sort of reimagining the Young Parent Healthy Teen Center, and we've kind of shifted the focus a little bit. And so the name is now the Youth Wellness Center. And part of the reason that we did that is because a really great thing to celebrate for our community is last year in the high schools, there was not a single positive pregnancy test within any of the teen health centers, which is a really great story to tell. And I think, you know, that was on the front page of the paper at the end of the school year, that in general around the state, pregnancy rates for teens are going down. which isn't to say it's not still happening, but we're doing a better job, I think, with that. So that's really exciting. And so, you know, we just weren't having a lot of teen parents come in. And so we're kind of we've restructured the space to be a little more teen friendly and a little less super little kid based. And so what we're doing back there is, starting in October, we have a variety of partnerships that we're offering classes to, drop-in classes, and some of them are closed classes. So we will have AEYC is doing a parenting workshop, and that is closed. So we'll be advertising for kids to families, parents to sign up for that. Childcare will be provided on site. We're going to have Juno Public Health is doing a cooking class for kids. The public libraries are doing a toddler reading time during the day. We're doing Teen Talk Tuesdays in there. So it'll just be, we're going to have lots of different things, and it's all really done through partnerships with other organizations. So if there's something, you know, that your organization that you feel like you want to bring to kids in the community and you're looking for a space, we would be happy to partner with you. So feel free to give me a call if that sounds like something that interests you. We're pretty excited about it, and I think it'll be really fun.
All right. So I bet it's easy to find you on the webs at Gordon Youth Center. Do you have Facebook?
We do. And Facebook is a great place to follow us. One thing I did want to mention is that we have coming up, because I know you're going to have the League of Women Voters coming in here right behind me. So we are partnering with the League of Women Voters, actually, to do a voter education series through September and October. And so starting September 21st, September 21st and September 28th, and then October 12th and October 26th, we're going to have, on the 21st of September, we're going to show Selma, Bridge to the Ballot. All of these programs run from about 6 o'clock until 8 p.m. On the 28th, we're going to show For the Rights of All, Ending Jim Crow in Alaska. And that's the movie about Elizabeth Paradovich. And then on October 12th, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott is going to come down and talk to the kids and be available to answer questions and talk about, you know, whatever he feels is the important thing that he wants to share with the kids. But definitely, you know, civic engagement is the idea too. And then on October 26th, we're going to have a panel with Juno's legislative candidates. So Justin Parrish will be there, and Kathy Munoz and Sam Keto. And the League of Women Voters will be, you know, are helping us put this all together. And they're going to be there with, able to register kids to vote, you know, kids that are going to be 18 by the election, or those 18 to 20-year-olds that we have come in. So
all right.
We're pretty excited about that.
A lot of opportunities, a lot of dates, but I bet they'll all be on your Facebook page.
Yep, follow us on Facebook. We're just getting the flyers out, and that's a great place to find out what we've got going on.
All right, Jordan, are we missing anything?
No, I think that's the main stuff.
All right, thanks for coming on
the
show.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars, climb on every rung. May you stay forever young. Grow up to be righteous, may you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong. May you stay forever young. Forever young. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of change shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. May you stay forever young. Forever young. Forever young. May you stay forever young. May you stay forever young.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 12th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. Joining me now in the studio is Allison Curry. She's a member of the Juno League of Women Voters. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. So a big event coming up soon on the 14th. What do you got going?
Yes, this Wednesday, September 14th, the League of Women Voters is hosting a candidate forum for the CBJ municipal candidates for the election on October 4th. So we have six assembly candidates running for three open seats and four school board candidates running for two open seats.
Okay, and where is this going to take place?
The event will be at the CBJ Assembly Chambers. There's a meet and greet that starts at 6:30, and those who can't attend in person can tune in to KTOO at 7 p.m.
Can you sort of describe for our listeners what this might look or sound like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will be moderating the forum Wednesday, and we split it up into two segments. So we'll start with the school board candidates first. Each candidate will get 1 minute to provide an opening statement, so tell a little bit about themselves, why they're running for office. And then prior to the forum starting, we collect questions submitted by audience members. So I do ask questions rotationally in sequence of the candidates. The first responder for a question will have 90 seconds to respond, and then each following candidate gets 45 seconds to provide a response. About 5 minutes before the end of each segment, every candidate will have 30 seconds to provide a closing statement. So after we wrap up the first segment with school board, we'll take about a five-minute break so the assembly candidates can take their seats and get settled, and then we'll go through the same routine with them as well.
Okay, so did you say meet and greet at 6?
Yep,
okay.
At 6:30.
6:30,
mm-hmm.
And then the forum starts at 7. It's at the CBJ Assembly Chambers this Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Yep. It'll also be here on KTOO.
Hey, yes, 104.3 FM. Yes, thank you for airing it.
Yeah, we're honored to do so. Tell us a little bit about the League of Women Voters. What?
Absolutely. So the League is a local, state, and then national organization. We're a nonprofit, a nonpartisan organization that's dedicated to increasing informed civic participation. And one way to do that is through informing voters about electoral candidates and issues of importance like this candidate forum. So using this format, so voters can get to know the candidates a little bit better, who's running and where they stand on issues that are important to them.
I know you've been a member for several years. What inspired you to support this group?
That's a great question. So I moved to Juno in 2013, and one of the current board members, George Brown, I had connected with him through other activities in the community, and he invited me to attend meetings, and I got hooked. So I became a board member shortly after that in the spring of 2014, and was a board of director for 2 years and continue to be a member and just enjoy educating voters and registering new voters.
You must believe in the power of the vote.
I do. Yes. Every vote counts. As we see, especially here in Alaska, where folks can win by a coin toss or just by a short 4 votes. So every vote really does count.
And you mentioned George Brown. The League of Women Voters is for everyone. Is that right?
It is for everyone. Yes.
Okay.
Everyone who believes in the power of the vote.
Mm-hmm. If there's somebody out there right now who hasn't voted in a while, or they're a borderline marginal voter, what would be your message to them, Allison?
Another good question. You know, and I understand because I do run into this, both with the league and through other work I do in the community. There does seem to be an increased sense of apathy among voters and just dissatisfaction with government. And this is my personal response, not a league response. But I would say, you know, if you're dissatisfied with what you see, and a lack of inaction, the only way to change that is to get involved. So change that with your vote. Get involved in organizations that do work with government and work with, whether at the local level, with the assembly or state legislature. You have to actually step up, get engaged, and do the work to see the change you want to see. Whatever you're dissatisfied with is not going to change by not participating in democracy.
All right. Allison Curry, she is a member of the League of Women Voters, here to remind us about the Municipal Candidate Forum this Wednesday. Doors open at 6:30. It's from 7 to 9 at the CBJ Assembly Chambers. I bet we can find you on Facebook, the League of Women Voters.
Yes, the Juno League chapter does have a Facebook page. We also have our own website. It's junolwv.org.
All right, Allison, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's it. We hope to see you at the Assembly Chambers on Wednesday, 6:30.
All right. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 12th of September, 2016. It's the birthday of H.L. Mencken, Henry Louis Mencken, born Baltimore, 1880, who said, "I believe that a young journalist turned loose in a large city had more fun than any other man." So he wrote for the Baltimore Sun for years. Also 30 books, including his trilogy of memoirs, Happy Days, Newspaper Days, Heathen Days, and The American Language, a multi-volume study of spoken American English. H.L. Mencken, who said, "I am strong in favor of liberty and I hate fraud." And it was on this day in 490 BC, the Battle of Marathon took place. Persians facing the Athenians across the plain of Marathon. The Athenians defeated them. It was a great victory for Greece and for Western civilization. And according to legend, a Greek messenger named Pheidippides ran the 25 miles from Marathon to Athens to bring news of the victory, collapsing and dying after he delivered it. Here's a poem for today by Jane Kenyon, "Three Songs at the End of Summer." First, a second crop of hay lies cut and turned. Five gleaming crows search and peck between the rows. They make a low, companionable squawk, and like midwives and undertakers, possess a weird authority. Crickets leap from the stubble, parting before me like the Red Sea. The garden sprawls and spoils. Across the lake, the campers have learned to water ski. They have or they haven't. Sounds of the instructor's megaphone suffuse the hazy air. Relax, relax. Cloud shadows rush over drying hay, fences, dusty lane, and railroad ravine. The first yellowing fronds of goldenrod brighten the margins of the woods. School books, carpools, pleated skirts, water, silver still, and a V of geese. Second, the cicada's dry monotony breaks over me. The days are bright and free, bright and free. Then why did I cry today for an hour with my whole body the way babies cry? Third, a white, indifferent morning sky and a crow hectoring from its nest high in the hemlock, a nest as big as a laundry basket. In my childhood, I stood under a dripping oak while autumnal fog eddied around my feet, waiting for the school bus with a dread that took my breath away. The damp dirt road gave off the same complex organic scent. I had the new books, words, numbers, and operations with numbers I did not comprehend, and crayons unspoiled by use in a blue canvas satchel with red leather straps. Spruce, inadequate, and alien, I stood at the side of the road. It was the only life I had. Three Songs at the End of Summer by Jane Kenyon from her collected poems published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by LegalZoom, supporting small businesses with formations, corporate filings, and independent contract and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 12th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. And joining me now in the studio is Hal Geiger. He's on the board of directors for the Foundation for End of Life Care. Welcome to the show, Hal.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. And also Dr. Kate Pyman. She's part of the Juno Medical Society. She's also a physician at the Southeast Medical Clinic. Did I get that right, doctor?
You did. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, welcome to the show. It looks like we're here to talk mostly about the film Being Mortal. You want to start us off with the details, Hal?
Well, right. The film is actually just a small excerpt from the book. The book is very expansive and covers a lot of material. But Frontline, the PBS Frontline, tried to boil down some of the important stuff into a short film, and that's what we're going to be watching. There'll be four showings. You might have already mentioned that. There'll be one tomorrow, Tuesday. There'll be one on Wednesday, and then there'll be a couple of matinees on the weekend. But, we want to talk about the book, and we want to use the book as kind of a springboard to talk about how hospice is utilized in Juno. And that's what we're here for.
Okay, and so the movie is showing tomorrow and Wednesday at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. Is that right?
That's correct. At 7:00.
Okay.
With a guided conversation afterwards.
Is there a cost for this?
No. It's free. It's free.
All right.
The Hospice Foundation of America really set this all up, and the foundation, Juno's own Foundation for End of Life Care, and the Juno Medical Society have picked up the tab for this.
All right, Doctor. How do you come in?
Well, I'm part of the Juno Medical Society that is, you know, partly sponsoring the event, and they asked some of the local physicians if we would be willing to help with some of the discussion afterwards. Being a primary care doctor here in Juno, I often deal with end-of-life care issues and with the hospice group here in Juno. And I think I think the Juno Medical Society feels like it's a really important topic and a really important conversation to have. And so the movie is a really good way to sort of open that conversation.
And this is based off of Dr. Atul Gawande. Am I saying his name right? His book?
Well, I think that's how he pronounces his name.
Okay.
Yes, it's out of his book, Being Mortal. I would say that's one of the five best books I've read in the last 10 years. It's just a beautifully written book, a lot of very personal material in there. The thing that I'll always remember about that book, he talks about how his grandfather died. His grandfather was 106 when he fell off his horse and hit his head. And that's in such contrast to how I've seen some of my friends' parents treated at the end of their life, where they have their freedom essentially taken away from them, and safety becomes a primary concern. And a lot of other things about the richness of life just are not a concern. But anyway, there's a lot of things in the book.
Right. So I have a clip here that is from the PBS Frontline I guess, profile on the book. And we'll, I guess in this we'll get to hear Dr. Gawande's voice. And he's talking about his own experience with his father.
The tumor had extended into his midbrain. The suggestion was that we should go see what options there might be for chemotherapy. So the oncologist lays out 8 or 9 different options, and we're swimming in all of it. Temozolomide, vincristine, vinblastine. And my dad says, well, what if I don't take any? And she said, well, that's your choice. Then started talking about how, you know, you really should think about taking the chemotherapy. Who knows? You could be playing tennis by the end of the summer. I mean, that was crazy. It made me very mad because it was
completely not right. Yeah.
You know, this guy's potentially within weeks of being paralyzed. It was holding out a hope that was not a realistic hope in order to get him to take the chemotherapy.
When he made the final decision that he doesn't, you know, want to, I told him, for me, it's okay if you're paralyzed, so what? I can take care of you. Mm. Yeah. And that's the main difference. It was not fine for him.
The oncologist was being totally human, and the oncologist was talking to my dad the way that I have been talking to my patients for 10 years. But hope is not a plan. And in fact, we find from our trials that we are literally inflicting therapies on people that shorten their lives and increase their suffering out of an inability to come to good decisions.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard a clip from Dr. Atul Gawande speaking as part of the PBS Frontline series that is looking at his book, Being Mortal. With me in the studios, Hal Geiger and Dr. Kate Pyman. Dr. Pyman, does this sort of resonate with you as a care provider, what he just said?
Absolutely. You know, I think as a care provider, you know, in training in medical school, we're taught to really emphasize making people better and healing people and fixing people. And when we aren't able to do that, it's oftentimes difficult as a provider. You feel like, you know, you failed the patient, and you don't want to be the one to say that, you know, there's nothing more we can do. It's a really hard thing to say to somebody. So I think sometimes providers maybe aren't always as honest with patients as they could be. And I think it's really important to be honest. I think the film really points that out. I think there's some scenes where you see providers really struggling with how to have that conversation with patients. And I think it's important as a patient to think about what's important to you and really tell your provider what's important to you. And I also think the film and the book do a really good job about that. You know, as a patient, thinking about what's important to you at the end of your life, what do you value? And making sure that your provider and your loved ones know that.
Hal, at tomorrow night's discussions, you'll be talking about hospice and Juno. What are a few points that you really want to make sure people talk about?
Well, I think part of our motivation is that hospice and Juno has not been used as well as it could be. And I know in Alaska, the use of hospice is less than the rest of the United States. But in Juno, it's even more so. So I know in Juneau, in 2015, 22% of people used hospice at the end of life, and the Alaskan average is 34%. And Juneau has a above average education level and above average income level. It seems like it should have been the other way around. So I guess we want people to think about the use of hospice. I guess I should also point out hospice almost closed not too long ago. And, you know, so we have this resource of hospice, and people have a hard time talking about it. But we want people to come talk about our hospice and how we're going to use it collectively as a community tomorrow night and the other after the other showings.
Dr. Pyman, you've had a chance to work with hospice. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it looks like for a person going through it? Or
sure.
A family, I should say, really, right?
Usually. Yeah. Generally hospice is used when a patient has a terminal condition and their life expectancy is less than 6 months. And in those situations, usually their provider, you know, their primary care provider, will make a referral to hospice. And hospice provides all kinds of support services for that patient, from nursing to, you know, social work, sometimes referrals for spiritual guidance. So they provide a support network for the patient and their family 24/7. They're not in the home 24/7, but they're available 24/7. They'll see patients every day if necessary, and they really provide a lot of advice. And their emphasis is on quality of life and that patient's, you know, whatever's important to that patient. And it's supported by their provider, but most of the work is done by the staff at hospice home care. They do have a medical director, but usually the care is overseen by their primary care provider. And it's a different emphasis than, you know, if you were on active treatment for a condition. You know, like I said, you have to have a terminal condition, and so the emphasis really becomes the what's important to that patient and the quality of their life. And what's really interesting and what the book and the movie point out is that in those types of situations, patients actually live longer and have a better quality of life when they get enrolled in hospice than if they are not enrolled in hospice. So, you know, I think some people have a perception that once they go on hospice care that, you know, everybody's given up on them and they don't, you know, they aren't getting the same care. But I think actually in reality, often the reverse is true. They'll find they have a lot more support. And they actually live longer, which is kind of astonishing. I think when those studies came out 5 or 6 years ago saying that that was the case, people were kind of surprised. But I think when you make the emphasis on the patient and not necessarily on the treatment, it can really be beneficial.
What does hospice cost, Al?
Well, I think some people, I'm not with hospice. I don't really know that off the top of my head, but I think a lot of it is billed to Medicare, Medicaid, Medicare, right? And then private insurance, I think, pays for some of it. Isn't that correct? But I don't think people get turned away because of needs, but I guess that'd be a better question for someone from hospice.
Okay. So again, these movies are, well, the movie and discussion, the profile about the book, the screening of that and the discussion is tomorrow and Wednesday at Gold Town. And remind me what time it starts?
Yeah, the shows on the weekends start at 7 o'clock. So okay. That'll be tomorrow and Wednesday. And then the matinees begin at 2 o'clock. That's on Saturday and on Sunday. I know there's some other events that I think the League of Women Voters has, or no, there's some candidates event. There's some conflicts. So we have four different showings to give to try to work everybody in.
Okay. Is there anything either of you would like to add about the book, the screening, the discussion?
No, I don't think so. Thanks, at least not for me, but thanks for having us, Scott.
Oh, you're welcome.
Kate,
yeah.
Do you have anything?
No, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for people to see the film and I would encourage everyone to think about reading the book as well. It's like Hal said, it's a really well-written book, and it's a really important conversation, I think, for everybody to think about. And thanks for
You're welcome. And that book is Being Mortal by Dr. Atul Gawande.
Yes. Yep.
All right. Thanks, you too.
Okay.
Thank you. To my mother.
travel, and still I have not found my way out of this night. And my life, it's tangled in wishes and so many things that just never turned out.
Listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, September 12th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, and my last guest on the show today is Catherine Heumann. She is the, we're not going to call it the WAC anymore, the Willoughby Arts Complex Project Manager. It is now the new Jack. Did I get it right?
That's right. You sure did.
And did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did. Thank you for asking. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, thank you for coming on the show. And will you tell us where we are? Actually, start by telling us what the new Jack, what was the WAC and what is the new Jack?
Great question. So this has been several months of sort of shifting names. We were calling this project the WAC, the Willoughby Arts Complex, for quite a while. And now we have an official board, and it's called the Partnership Board. The reason it's called the Partnership Board is because we are actually partnering with other arts organizations, such as the Symphony, such as Juno Jazz and Classics, such as Lyric Opera. And so that's why we're calling it the Partnership Board. It's a 15-member strong board, and they're very active. We've been very busy. That board, at our most recent meeting, voted to use the interim name New Jack, rather than the WAC or the Arts Center or the Arts Complex. And the reason for that is because that's what it is, and that the Jack itself is known in Juneau. It's something that's important to people in Juneau. Lots of us use it for many different things. It's a warm place to go to have your wedding reception, to attend a concert, to have your meeting, to the roller derby girls use it. You know, so many community events happen there. We want to preserve that feel, that relationship to the community. So we're calling it the New Jack because it will be the same. It will be a community center with a theater, and it will preserve that sense of community.
And in case anyone doesn't know, the acronym JAC is Juno Arts and Culture Center, right?
Correct. Thanks for clarifying. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so these are the third round of community sessions for people to come in and weigh in on what they want the new JAC to look like. Is that right?
Yeah, more or less. So this is the third session with the architects. So we chose the architects that we're working with, I think it was back in April. And those architects are our local architects, Northwind. And Northwind partnered with some folks from Portland called Hacker. Hacker's worked on other projects in Juneau over the years, so they know Juneau. And then we have a theater consultant from San Francisco on that team. So we've been working with that team. We're in what's called the conceptual design phase of the project. So this third session is the third of three sessions where The architects have met with the community, bringing them sketches and ideas and possibilities for this new center, and listening to what people have to say. The greater public, the users, and the technical people who are behind the scenes doing sound and lights and sets and all the things that make up any given event. So they'll be here. This time is really exciting because they are bringing us a refined option based on work that they did and feedback that they got the last two times they were here. So we're really excited to see what they've come up with.
How the last sessions, what are they like? People coming in with positive ideas? What's the atmosphere like?
The atmosphere is like a town hall, maybe that's a town hall in the sense that it's a very open and welcoming event where the architects are showing us their ideas, and it's a conversation. It's a dialogue. It's not just a presentation. There is a presentation, but it's an open presentation. And then as it winds up, you usually see people up at the boards that the architects have brought, and they're all drawing. Everybody's drawing, and they're talking to the architects, and there's this real dialogue going on.
Okay. And so this Wednesday, the day after tomorrow, you said it's a stakeholder start at 4:30.
Right. So at 4:30, Juneau Economic Development Council is hosting a Willoughby neighborhood stakeholders group, Willoughby District stakeholders group meeting at 4:30. And it will be at the Jack in the big main hall. And just happens that they're doing that, and then coinciding with them, we are doing our third meeting with the architects. So what is really exciting is that people coming for the Willoughby District stakeholders meeting to hear from people in the neighborhood. For instance, there's going to be a presentation, I understand, on the district heating concept. There's going to be a presentation from Centennial Hall about what their new things are. I'm not sure about everybody else. Perhaps K2 is going to do it's an opportunity for the neighborhood to update each other on what their future plans are. That happens at 4:30, and it segues directly into the presentation by the architects at 5:30 about our current option that they've been refining for us. So it's a really nice way to come at 4:30 and stay until about 6:30 or 7, as long as you can and can carve out, and really get updated about what's going on in the neighborhood.
Okay. Who would benefit from coming to those meetings besides the people you just mentioned?
Yeah. So anyone who's really interested in downtown Juneau, and especially in this district, and has watched some of the amazing things that have happened already, including the APK, the new museum, library, and archives right here across the street, and the Walter Sobeleff building just down the street, and just watching how downtown is changing and what the future plans are for changes in this area. So those people, actual people who use the Jack now or would hope to use the Jack, the new Jack, caught myself there, the new Jack in the future, maybe those are performers that might use the theater. Maybe those are people like myself. My son just was married a few weeks ago, and they had a fantastic party at the Jack following their wedding. Maybe it's people who are in education who would like to use the new Jack and the various rooms. There'll be a seminar room, and there'll be an event studio in there separate from the big main hall. So potential users. That is almost everybody in town.
Okay. So that's Wednesday, 4:30 or 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's more meetings on Thursday. Is that right?
So the meeting on Thursday that people will be interested in from 10 a.m. to noon, this is for, they're calling it a focus group meeting. And this is for users. So this is generally the arts organizations or artists who might be using this facility specifically in the future, and for the technical people that I mentioned. So the people who know about the back scenes, behind the scenes stuff, the lights and the sound and the sets and the what do you need to make something happen, those people that want to see where the design is, the conceptual design is now, so that they can say, wow, this really looks like it's going to work well, or here's what I think about what you just, you know, let whatever the different pieces of this program are.
Okay, so that will be from Thursday from 10 to noon?
That's right, at the Jack at the main hall.
If people want to learn more, Catherine, where should they go about all of this?
Yeah, so on the Jack website, so jahc.org, there's a tab or a drop-down called Community, and we are the first link under Community. It's now called the new Juno Arts and Culture Center. First tab under Community on the Jack website.
What excites you most about this project?
You know, what excites me most are the people who are involved right now and the people that get excited about it themselves. And that includes the board. It includes the fundraising committee. It includes the Jack board. So there's two boards when I say board. And then just yesterday, there was just an amazing event, the first of five. It was a piano recital, piano concert performance that was done at Northern Lights Church. Yesterday's pianist was Mary Watson. There are going to be four more of those, and the proceeds from those events are specifically going towards a new piano for the new facility. And this idea was born from the pianists themselves, and I just think it's remarkable. The events are free. You can go for free. You can drop a dollar in the jar, or you can drop as much as you want in the jar, and it'll go towards the piano. So those dates are also of the next four piano recitals are on our website as well, one a month for 4 months.
Okay. Catherine Heumann, she is the project manager for the new Jack. There are meetings Wednesday at 4:30, starting at 4:30 at the Jack, at the old Jack.
Right, yeah.
The current Jack, and then on Thursday from 10 to 12. Thank you for coming on the show, Catherine. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd just like to see everybody come out, and I think you'll be excited to see what the architects are going to show us this time. And I'm excited to hear from the Willoughby stakeholders, the Willoughby District stakeholders, and learn more about the other players in this neighborhood and what their thinking is for changes and improvements in the Willoughby District.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning into a Juno afternoon. The forecast for tonight calls for rain, lows in the mid-50s, and southeast winds up to 30 miles per hour. The forecast for tomorrow calls for rain likely, highs around 60, southeast winds to 15 miles per hour.